Good morning, Your Honors, and thank you for granting oral arguments in this case. May it please the court, my name is Todd Stoneman, and I am counsel for the appellant, Mr. Charles Berry. The crux of the issues before the court today boils down to, does the Colorado Division of Gaming have the sole and exclusive jurisdiction to adjudicate cases involving common law claims and statutory claims? Namely, as applicable to appellant, are his contractual, tort, and Colorado Consumer Protection Act claims required to be brought solely and exclusively before the Division of Gaming? In granting appellee's motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, the district court found this to be the case. Appellant, however, thinks otherwise and contends that the lower court erred in its dismissal ruling and therefore requests that this court overturn the lower court's dismissal and remand the matter for proper consideration. Furthermore, with respect to the lower court's dismissal, predicated on the appellant's failure to exhaust administrative remedies, not only is exhaustion unnecessary under the present circumstances, but even if it were required, appellant has done so, and thus judicial review pursuant to section 12-47.1-521 of the Gaming Act is available here at the Court of Appeals. Now, it is appellant's contention that the district court committed error when it issued a blanket dismissal of all three of appellant's claims. We acknowledge appellee's argument that one or more of appellant's claims perhaps may be subject only and exclusively to the commission's jurisdiction. However, before any concession on our part is accepted, it is imperative that each of appellant's claims be reviewed separately and individually based on each's jurisdictional basis alone.
Mr. Stoneman, if I can interrupt you here, sure. I guess I'm not sure. Are you conceding one claim, two claims? I guess I didn't understand what your concession is.
All we're doing, Your Honor, and thank you for that question, all we're doing is acknowledging that the commission has been bestowed upon from the Act itself jurisdiction to resolve what it terms in its regulations patron disputes.
All right, so I think that you're conceding, if I'm understanding, and push back if I get it wrong,
sure.
That the commission does have jurisdiction over matters within its kind of regulatory jurisdiction, if it would, whatever is defined in the regulations.
Absolutely,
all
yes.
Right. So I guess the question comes down to, and I'm not even sure your colleagues here would necessarily dispute that there are certain tort and contract claims that would exist. I think they cite in their briefs the example of, you know, if a machine, you know, God forbid, fell on somebody's head and they were seriously hurt, you could sue for tort. So I guess the question in this case comes down to whether the claims that you're bringing here really are something different than the regulatory, than what's within the regulatory jurisdiction of the commission. And I'll just, you know, pose this to you and ask you to push back. But I think there's a pretty good argument that it sounds like your claims for outrageous conduct contract and even CCPA all are basically, I was damaged because you didn't pay me the jackpot that I believed I had won. Why isn't it, so you can push back and you'll say that's not your claims, but it seems like it's a mm-hmm. good argument. Mm-hmm. That's what the claims are. The facts are all the same. It said I won the jackpot, you didn't pay me, and I was damaged. Now, there are different labels on the kind of damages, I understand. But why isn't that kind of claim within the regulatory jurisdiction of the commission? I mean, I don't think you could just slap, here's the facts. I didn't get my jackpot, you owed it to me, and then just say, here, the damages are different, therefore I can avoid the regulatory jurisdiction. Why aren't your claims within the regulatory jurisdiction?
Right. And excellent. And we absolutely acknowledge the fact that we went through the administrative remedies that are available to the appellant here in terms of the machine malfunction, hit the jackpot, didn't get paid. Now, we exhausted those remedies as they're provided for in the regulatory function of the administration with the agency. Now, their experience and their expertise in determining whether or not the jackpot should have been paid in that matter has already been determined, and they rightfully have jurisdiction to determine those matters. What we're talking about are matters of law.
Mr. Stoneman, yes. Let me quickly interject. Sure. Is that final?
It is final, yes. Okay. Yes. And to your question, is it final? Appellee's contention is that it is not final because the actual ruling has not been sent in the mail. However, we argue that form should definitely take precedence here over substance. In the commission's minutes on their website, it was posted that they directed the Attorney General to issue such ruling, and now here we are a year and a half later, and such ruling still has not been mailed. However, it was posted publicly on their website that they reached that decision.
Okay, and I'm sorry to interrupt. Just wanted to get clarification of your position on that.
Absolutely. So we do believe that it's their decision regarding the malfunction is final.
Okay.
Back to your question, Your Honor. We are not trying to creatively come up with some other way to circumvent the regulatory function of the administrative agency and the powers that it's been given. However, we feel that there are other causes of action that arise here that are outside the purview of the commission's jurisdiction, and it's important because of the nature of the act and the nature of the division itself and what it does and the purpose it serves to the public, that these matters be adjudicated in the proper courts.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Stoneman. Let's take one claim at a time, and I appreciate where you're heading to let, I agree with you, you need to look at each claim separately. Let's take the outrageous conduct claim. Do you have any claim, does Mr. Berry have any claim if the evidence shows that if he did not actually win the jackpot, when you take the computer chip out and you look at it, he didn't win?
Mm-hmm.
Does he have a claim for outrageous conduct in that circumstance, and how?
Yes, we believe he does, and that's what we laid out in our briefing to the court, is that the fact that it indicated that he had won, all systems showed a winner, and on the floor, everyone around him recognized that there was a win that had happened in this casino. From that point, once the maintenance or whoever it is that works for this casino comes over and opens up the machine and determines that it actually did malfunction, that lapse in time there, we argue that he was damaged, that he was excited, subsequently embarrassed, humiliated, extremely upset. The elation, the range of emotions to go from elation to utter disappointment to realize what had happened, we contend qualifies as damages.
But does it not all relate to the fact that the machine claimed that he said he won and now the casino says he didn't? I mean, isn't that, that's, I guess I'm coming back to the same thing. It at least feels to me, and please push back,
mm-hmm.
It feels to me like that's exactly what the commission is set up to do. I mean, there's an exact regulation called patron disputes that said, it says you won, you didn't win, you can challenge that, and then the commission gets to decide if you get the money. And what seems to me different is the kinds of damages that you're seeking, which here are essentially emotional distress damages. And I guess I worry whether can you really get around the commission by just changing the types of damages that you're entitled to. I suppose your argument would be the commission's only authorized to award the jackpot. And you're saying it's different damages, it's emotional distress, but can you really get around that regulation by just saying the damages are different?
Well, and I think that's the question before the court today, and our contention would be that the act, as well as the regulations that correspond with such act, haven't been articulated properly enough to be able to account for what you're asking. So, and especially with the Consumer Protection Act claim, what you're saying, I acknowledge, and that's where I was going with the concession a little bit, is that the tort and the contract, perhaps, but certainly different than the Consumer Protection Act claim, which its very purpose is to protect the public. And these regulations, their purpose is to regulate the industry itself.
Well, let's look at it. The CCPA claim is the one claim where, if I'm misremembering, I apologize. The complaint specifically says the damages you're looking for, and you specifically are asking for triple the jackpot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't there a pretty good argument that that's exactly what the commission is? They can give you the jackpot back. So the difference is you want triple the jackpot because it's a CCPA claim.
Right. Well, we have no other way to tie any sort of, I mean, you're well aware in law, I mean, damages is everything. Other than pulling a number out of thin air, there's no other way to ascertain any sort of damage amount without using what the jackpot showed.
Well, let's assume for the moment, and I think we all logically can agree your client suffered. It would be horrible that to think you won all this money and you're preparing your kids' education, college, et cetera, and then they pull the rug out from under you. You've got the damages of emotional distress, but where's liability? When you file a complaint, it's not a contract action, it's a negligence action. Where is the standard of care and the negligence aspect of it? How are they negligent if the commission says they didn't have to pay because it was malfunctioning? A three-legged stool, right?
Right, right. And respectfully, if I understand your question, I would say where the duty arises is the casino, the licensee, is putting on its floor for use a machine and holding it out as operational. Therein itself lies a duty where, granted in the regulations, it accounts for such malfunction, but specifically talking about where duty arises, that would be it. That it's holding out for use a machine.
So your contention is that they have to put out, all the machines have to be in working order, and if they have a machine that's malfunctioning, that falls below the standard of care.
Yes, it does.
And if it causes emotional damages like happened here, they should pay for it.
Or the regulations themselves should be revisited and figure out and determine a better way to account for such malfunction.
If we decide that we don't have jurisdiction because there's not a final order, are you asking for a remand to order the commission to issue a ruling?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'll reserve what's remaining for rebuttal.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Stoneman. It's Mr. Barnes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Per your rules, Mark Barnes, Brown State Hyde Farber Shred, 23091, can also make introductions. Dan Carr, it represents the Valley manufacturer, my associate, Carrie Williams, and her number is 41596. I think the fundamental problem here, and obviously Mr. Barry and Mr. Stoneman have strong opinions about how patron disputes should be resolved. And they also have opinions about what should happen if the machine malfunctions. But those matters are clearly within the regulatory oversight of the Limited Gaming Commission and the Division of Gaming that were created by statute and the extensive regulations that they've enacted. Now, Mr. Barry would like to bypass all those regulations and say, well, I just want to go make a public policy argument to the district court about what I think is fair. He's gone out of his way in his briefing to emphasize that he is not alleging that any gaming regulation or rule or statute has been violated by anyone, whether it's the defendants or the Division of Gaming and how they handled this whole process. That really illustrates the fundamental problem with plaintiff's case in this regard. I think that they either don't appreciate or mischaracterize the breadth and the detail of the regulatory structure for gaming in Colorado, specifically as it relates to slot machines. I don't want to go into great detail, but long before you even get to a patron dispute regulation, which we think on its face, that's dispositive of the entire issue. But long before you get there, there are extensive specifications that they put forward in terms of what a slot machine must be before you even design it. Once it is designed and submitted, before you could ever put it on the floor of a casino in Colorado, it has to be submitted to the division for extensive testing and review. Not just the internal mechanics and the computer parts of it, but also the rules, including the rule here, which is posted on the machine, that specifically says, and Mr. Berry quoted this in his complaint, malfunctions void all pays and play. The division is specifically authorized by rule to consider whether the rules and warnings are incomplete, misleading, or confusing. Doesn't stop there. They also have regulations where they are specifically authorized to review advertising regarding any gaming to make sure that's not misleading. That's not alleged here, but I'm just illustrating how extensive that is. Now you get to the point where you get approval, you put the machine on the floor. Now there are internal regulations, there are ongoing maintenance and testing regulations. The division itself randomly tests machines at all of the casinos to ensure compliance. In the rare event that you have an unfortunate situation where there's a malfunction, they specifically have developed a process to address that. That process was followed precisely here. As soon as there was an issue, Mr. Stoneman talks about the short time between thinking he had won and a casino employee coming over. To Judge Rothenberg, your point in terms of distinguishing damages from conduct, I still don't understand, and I don't think Mr. Stoneman addressed, what specific conduct or inaction that they are alleging the defendants did that would form a recovery under any theory, statute, rule, regulation, or otherwise. Essentially, it seems to me like he's suggesting that he thinks there should be a strict liability standard that says slot machines, unlike any other machine in the world, simply cannot malfunction.
Well, let me push back on you a little bit here, Mr. Barnes. I, with respect, I don't think that's really what he's arguing. I think Mr. Stoneman and Mr. Berry's argument here is that the regulation doesn't go as far as you say. So let me drill down on that. I mean, it does talk about if the licensee refuses payment of alleged winnings to a patron. The argument they're making is this is not just seeking winnings. That's why they concede. The winnings are not an issue here. We get, I am not entitled to the winnings. Okay, fine. That's what the commission would do, I think. And Mr. Stone will correct me when he gets up again, I suppose. Their argument is an outrageous conduct claim is something different. Now, your argument, and I was asking Mr. Stoneman about the same thing, I guess, is you got to get the conduct is the same, and you don't get to get that around the regulation because the damages may be different. But I think Mr. Stoneman is arguing, you know, an outrageous conduct that's different. I mean, essentially, there's a fraud in the public by putting machines out there, and I understand your argument, but I think his argument at root is the regulation doesn't go as far. It covers a very specific scenario. You don't pay me the winnings. I'm not seeking the winnings. I'm seeking something else. And on this point, I guess I'll ask you on the CCPA side, you know, Showpiece Homes is a pretty broad ruling. The CCPA is a whole different animal here. And even if you have a broad regulatory scheme, the CCPA, you still get to bring a CCPA claim. I mean, how do you get around that in this case?
Very good question. In terms of Showpiece Homes, first of all, what the focus there was, you can read regulatory schemes in conjunction with the CCPA so long as you don't have a conflict. Here we would posit you necessarily have a conflict when the regulatory scheme specifically authorizes an adjudicatory process. And if you go back through the gaming regulations, there are regulations for citizens to file complaints, for adjudicatory hearings. That's one of the distinctions between some of the CCPA claims where they've applied that in the context of like attorney regulation. A person in the public can complain about a conduct of an attorney and the attorney can be penalized, but the person in the public doesn't have an adjudicatory process for them to recover. The gaming regulations specifically create that adjudicatory process. It doesn't say in the regulation determine merely if the casino or manufacturer should be punished. It says the director, after extensive investigation, and you really can't lose sight of the investigation side of this just because I think it's obvious on its face, but just how much expertise really needs to be had to determine all the things that relate to a slot machine or a gaming play. But the determination is determine whether or not the patron should be paid. to try to recharacterize it now to say, well, I'm not really claiming I won, I'm claiming I thought I won. That's like getting a breach of contract claim dismissed and then coming back to the court saying, well, okay, then I'm not claiming a breach of contract, I want to recover because I thought there was a breach of contract. The casino and the manufacturer are very disappointed, and they don't like the fact that Mr. Berry thought he'd won it, even for a very brief amount of time. But that does not change the fact that the gaming regulators specifically decide and educate the public that merely because the reels are displayed indicate that maybe you thought you'd won, that does not mean you won. So this whole notion of saying it's outrageous, you really have to come back. And that goes to the CCPA article itself that talks about when conduct is specifically authorized or follows an agency rule, that is not covered by the CCPA. That's explicit in the CCPA. Now, in the Showcase Homes, they weren't dealing with something that was actually following an agency rule or regulation. Here, we have multiple steps all the way through the testing process, the licensing process, everything about this followed the rules. Ultimately, you get to a determination by the division of whether or not the defendant should pay, and they followed that order. Now, if Mr. Berry doesn't like that, the procedure set up a way that he can appeal that to the commission. If he doesn't like that, it can go to the Court of Appeals purely on the deferential review. All the courts in other jurisdictions that have addressed this precise situation have explicitly found that the gaming regulators have the exclusive jurisdiction, and it doesn't matter how creative the plaintiff's counsel is, whether they phrase something as a contract claim, a tort claim, and we cited numerous cases. I will say that Mr. Stoneman takes the approach of, well, you can't look at cases from any other jurisdiction because Colorado has its own unique structure. Yes, that's true. The Colorado Supreme Court, even in the CCPA cases that Mr. Stoneman cited, talk about the appropriateness to look at how other states treat their Consumer Protections Act. The same logic applies with regard to gaming. Certain divisions do have some differences that might make a difference. Mr. Stoneman hasn't pointed to a distinction to any of the gaming regulations with regard to Mississippi or Michigan or the cases we've cited. It's important to understand that all the way back to 1931 when Nevada first legalized gaming, since that time more than 20 states have legalized some form of casino gaming. Colorado didn't just pull out of thin air some regulations. These regulatory structures are based and modeled on what other states are doing. The states that do have gaming all have very developed gaming, whether they call it a commission, a division, a regulatory body, with the expertise to address these precise issues. Before 1991, there was absolutely no basis to go into court on any gaming winning issue. If you were playing a slot machine in 1989 in Colorado, and you thought you had won, or even if you actually had won, you could not go into court and make a tort claim, a contract claim, a Consumer Protection Act claim, and that is all clear, and we cited Colorado case law in that regard. That's specifically what the CalCERT and some of the cases from Mississippi and Michigan detail, that when you make something legal that was not legal before, and you've granted these rights, and you've put a regulatory body in place with the expertise and the resources to resolve those sort of things, they specifically said it is a waste of the court's time for those sorts of disputes, regardless of how you characterize them, to have those disputes come to the court. There is a proper method set forth in the Administrative Procedure Act and the gaming regulations as to how you get to a court. The only way that you can get to a court is if you have the exhaustion, if you bring it in the right court, and you bring the right claim, the only claim, which is deferential review of the agency's decision. In terms of the exhaustion, Judge Furman, you asked whether there was a final decision. Yes, the commission actually held an adjudicatory hearing and affirmed the director's decision. I would note that the analysis of whether or not exhaustion of administrative remedies has occurred, Colorado case law that we cite specifically says you don't look at the way things stand now today. You look at it at the time that the plaintiff brought the lawsuit. He brought the lawsuit within just a couple of weeks after the commission's hearing. Even if there is exhaustion, it's not going back or remanding to the district court here. That's not the proper court. He would have to start an entirely new action in this court, and this is not a substitute to say, well, we're already here. If he did bring that action, your review would be limited to the record, and there would be it would be a completely different review process. So I just wanted to make that point on exhaustion. In terms of, I would like to point out quickly, in terms of fees, I'm sure that that is one of the least favorite issues for you to ever hear about. I'm sure everyone who comes in here thinks that they should be paid and they never should have been dragged through this process. I will note that I believe, and defendants believe, this is a unique situation. In that, before, during, and after the trial process, we repeatedly tried to communicate and wrote letters to defense counsel or plaintiff's counsel to educate him about the breadths and the specifics of Colorado regulatory law, the Gaming Commission regulations. Now, Colorado Statute 1317-201 says that if a defendant gets a tort claim dismissed on a motion to dismiss under 12B, you're entitled to fees. He brought a tort claim, outrageous conduct. I'm still not sure what he is alleging was outrageous, but that was dismissed. After the case, again, when defendants had hoped this was over, he indicated that he intended to appeal. We wrote him again, explaining again, here's all the basis, the court, here's all the case law.
So you're not asking for fees for groundless and frivolous. You're asking under the statute?
It would actually be both, Your Honor. The groundless, we believe that it even meets the higher standard of groundless and frivolous.
Well, in fact, in your brief, excuse me for interrupting, Ms. Barnes, the only argument you made in your brief was 1317-102. I understand now you're asking for fees under the tort statute, but I don't think you asked for that in your brief unless I'm missing it.
Well, that ask in our briefs, you're correct, Your Honor, but that ask was at this point with this body for the costs that were incurring in the appellate process, that's where the 1317-1024 regarding the substantial lack of substantial justification comes into play, and we do ask for that here. I would say that they don't have any rational argument that this is not a, quote, patron dispute, which is clearly covered by the regulations. They don't have a rational argument that there was anything outrageous about the defendants following every structure and guidance from the division and the regulations on how to conduct their business and deal with a patron dispute. And they don't have a good faith basis as to why any court should substitute Mr. Berry or Mr. Stoneman's personal opinion about how malfunctions should or shouldn't be treated as a matter of fairness, when this is clearly within the regulatory confines and structure of the gaming regulations. Thank you very much.
Mr. Stoneman, got 2 minutes and 17 seconds.
Thank you. With all due respect, regarding the claims of frivolous and groundless claims, we don't feel that way at all, and it's not based on personal opinion. It's based on a lack of clarity coming from the regulations. Now, to illustrate over that point, what I posit to the court, according to appellees, the Gaming Commission and the regulations that correspond, every single time a patron plays a slot machine, every single time, if that slot machine does not pay out, technically, the way that it's written now, they could bring a patron dispute and say, hey, I actually think I won, and all of a sudden, you have to go through all the channels that exist for the opposite. The casino holds all the cards when it comes to determining what qualifies as a patron dispute. And that's just patently unfair for the public when you're dealing with an industry where the state itself enjoys substantial benefit from tax revenues, from the public going there and frequenting and gambling at these establishments. How you never hear about casino operators running out after patrons saying, hey, sorry, the thing malfunctioned, you actually won. You never hear about that. but certainly hear about this. That is wrong. That is wrong, and that needs to be corrected. However, that needs to be taken care of. It needs to be taken care of because the public is at risk here, and the public is in a position that they should not be. So, frivolous and groundless, absolutely not. The claims that we bring are firmly rooted in common law and statutory principles. They exist for a reason. They find original jurisdiction in district courts, and we just don't believe that the division and the commission has the jurisdiction to hear such matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stoneman. Appreciate the briefs and the arguments of all counsel here in the case. And the case will stand submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. That does.